Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Thank you for tuning in to 97.1 FM Talk, St. Louis's home for conservative talk. Is that the red light? Is this happening?
That's the red light.
I just noticed
that when you turned it on.
All righty then. We're still broadcasting in the studio in the corner of KMOX over here on KFDK as they are sprucing up the technology in the 97.1 studio. So we appreciate you being with us today and hang out for chaos to ensue. Ryan, this is the actual truth. Ryan is in the studio with us the entire show to stabilize things.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Yeah.
I like that the show started with you guys going, hey, we're going to do the show. Hey, a thing!
can you explain
that thing?
Can you explain what we just discovered here in the studio?
There's a light. Somebody put a red cloth over it to make it look like it's a on-air light.
So in radio, a little behind-the-scenes information, when a microphone is open, which means that it's on, there's traditionally a light in the studio that is red. So it's like, hey, everybody, the people can hear you.
Be careful what you're saying now.
Yeah. Know that you are being heard over the broadcast so that you're not talking over commercials or whatever. Yesterday, we didn't have that, so we had to be super careful. And this time, I think it's a floodlight with white paper or red paper. I'm sorry.
Or a bag.
That's good. I like it.
It's on. It works.
It's an addition. It's kind of, to me, it reminds me a little bit of like Kamala Harris's solution to a problem. It's like you need to know that the microphones are open. So you put that together and you're like, see, it's a new way forward.
The reason it reminds me of Kamala Harris is because red reminds me of communism.
There.
And I'll just go ahead and leave that. Thank you very much.
No,
been a great start to the show.
Good night, everybody.
And it's pink, so it's a little deceptive.
True.
It's like headed there.
Yeah. It's yeah, right. You're on their way.
Yeah. You know, I've seen a lot more reaction to the National Association of Black Journalists comments that were made yesterday. The interview between Kamala Harris and that panel. And it's the same organization. Remember that really super hostile back and forth between Donald Trump? And when he showed up, they started 40 minutes late. Kamala Harris had committed to being there but wasn't. And then they came up, Donald Trump sits down, and the first thing that it said is, why are you so racist? I mean, that's a summary.
It was fire breathing from the get-go. They were singeing his eyebrows.
And Donald Trump, politically, could be argued, shouldn't go do that event. But he shows up. He continues to show up, just like he shows up on ABC in front of those clowns who ran that second debate. He showed up at CNN when you've got, as he used to call him, Fake Tapper and Dana Bash. And that turned out to play out in a way that ended the career of the current president of the United States, which is quite a sentence. He showed up. He said, you tell me where and when, and I'll be there. And Kamala Harris runs scared from every opportunity she gets to be in front of somebody who would even marginally push back against her. And I just think that, I mean, the National Association of Black Journalists is a perfect example of the difference between these two candidates. They are not the same.
Yeah, yesterday when we were, I think it was the 1:45 segment, we had just gotten done interviewing Andy McCarthy, or you did, and we just said, okay, she's speaking. We went live to it. We didn't have any idea what she was talking about in any given moment. We went live to it. And right when we turned it on, the question was, you know, you may be slipping among black men. What are you doing to reach out more to get the votes of black men? She then goes into a pre-scripted answer that she's given about five times already about economics. They really didn't have to do with race, which is good, you know, because economics should not have to do with race. So that's a step forward. But it was all about small businesses and tax credit, basically government handouts. It's such a swing and a miss for her to continually do this with the economy, because she's not speaking to 90% of America when she's talking to small business owners. And small business owners don't believe her because they're better with money than her. So I don't know that she has an economic plan.
I am floored, especially after having seen Matt Walsh's latest movie in theaters, which I paid for my ticket to go see it. B, we're trying to get Matt Walsh on the show. He's been on the show before. I've had dinner with Matt Walsh before, so I have a professional, moderate relationship with him as somebody who interviews people. We're trying to get him on the show right now. I get nothing for telling you to go see this movie other than the fact that you absolutely need to go see Am I Racist in the theaters right now. You will laugh so hard. You will be super uncomfortable and you will be laughing. And it exposes the entire grift that is the race portion of the culture wars we're facing right now. The movie does not make the case that racism doesn't exist. The movie is not out there to make the case that there aren't racist white people, there aren't racist black people, that racism doesn't exist. The idea of the movie is to prove that the current face of anti-racism in the United States is so inverted and upside down and backwards. It kind of sounds like Sonny Hostin.
It just seems to me that since she is in an interracial marriage, she should have known that to support a racist is problematic. Her children are biracial, and her family is one of the families that in the 70s could not have lived in any of Donald Trump's buildings. So it just seems to me that maybe she's just not that politically savvy.
So Sonny Hostin has the stones to go criticize Brittany Mahomes and her biracial children and is blacksplaining to Brittany Mahomes about what it's like to know and understand black people. When Patrick Mahomes is her husband, her children are biracial. I don't understand the upside down that we're living in, where any normal, independently thinking person of any walk of life, of any racial skin tone, hears Sonny Hostin and goes, that's right, you tell Brittany Mahomes. Brittany Mahomes is in a relationship with somebody who loves her, who has married her, who's created a family with her, and Sonny Hostin is going to explain it to her? Like, maybe it's possible, Sonny, that Brittany Mahomes and Patrick Mahomes, we've played that clip on this show, has very smartly been like, I'm a football player. I'm not here to tell anybody who to vote for. I think you should vote. But that's not my place. It's not my interest. I like people who support both sides. And that's like Elfine for Patrick Mahomes. But Sonny Hostin is so disgusted with the idea that a white woman out there, and is Patrick Mahomes, he's biracial, isn't he?
Yeah.
I would assume that he could claim to be black. I don't know what the rules are. I don't really care about the rules because they're just people. They're people. But to Sonny Hostin, they're not. They're pawns. And the color of your pawn indicates what you are to do next with your life. And if it doesn't go the way Sonny Hostin says, I'll quote the president of the United States. If you don't vote for Kamala Harris, you ain't black. I mean, that's the way these people think. And it's outrageous. And it's really untenable in a civilized society. There's no way you unite people with the Sonny Hostin mentality.
No, it's deliberately divisive. It disappoints me that there are people that apparently that we're interacting with every day, I don't know all the time, that like Sonny Hostin, who walk around and they see the world through racial lenses. Every single possible problem can be described by the color of somebody's skin and their background, basically outward characteristics. It disappoints me even more that we're at a place in culture where she is elevated to the place where she's at by
she
people
even has the right to sit
who are in charge platform. of ABC and The View. They chose her deliberately to share those views, and they do this across all their platforms. It's not just The View; it is across all of these networks, all of these newspapers. That's the goal that they're trying to instill on all of America.
Well, I was going to say, to bring it back full circle, seeing people by their race, by their sex, by their sexual orientation, all of that stuff, that's all a goal of DEI. I forget what they call it. There's a name for it. Man, it's escaping me now. But anyway, they want to chop everybody up into little manageable groups. Mm-hmm. You fit into this category. You forget, intersectionality is the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
You fit into this category, or you fit into this category, and you fit into this category, and then your importance is based on the hierarchy of victimhood. So you get, for lack of a better term, points for being and falling into these different categories. And really, at the end of the day, it's not anything to make stuff better, because I would argue that race relations were better when I was younger. You know?
Wait, in the 90s, I mean, I've always been a white person. But I don't remember this kind of division existing when I was a kid.
Right.
And I went to school with multiracial people, more white people than not. I think that it probably reflected somewhat of the racial makeup of the area I was in. But right now it's like the topic. It's the leading topic of everything cultural that we discuss.
It's frustrating to me, because rather than moving forward and coming together, and me seeing Annie as Annie and Annie seeing me as Brad, rather than our race, our sex, or our sexual orientation, we have to look at these other things that really, in the scheme of things, matter less than who we are as a person.
And if you watch, which, Brad, you've seen Am I Racist?
Yes.
I've seen Am I Racist? If you watch it, like, the whole purpose of anti-racism is that the first thing you're supposed to see is color. It's the opposite of what we were raised to think. The whole, you know, there's even one time where someone brings up Martin Luther King Jr. and the person in the film scoffs at the idea of the suggestion. And you're like kind of leaning forward in your chair, and you just sit back and you're like, whoa, whoa, what is this? This is not what I know. Let's talk more about this throughout the course of the show. We're going to have Dory Murdoch on at 107, and I'm excited to talk to Lieutenant Joe Grimaldi about the Police Association. He's the Fraternal Order of Police National Vice President. We're going to talk to him about crime, law, and order and this election. But we've got Dr. Marty McCary coming up next, and this is something that I'm really opening my eyes to here. Listen to his words.
Well, look, we get groupthink in medicine, and we get things wrong. And when you've got a small group of people at the top making decisions for everybody on public health, we tend to have a lousy track record. We said opioids were not addictive for 30 years, igniting the opioid epidemic. We said peanut butter should be avoided in infants, igniting the modern-day peanut allergy epidemic. We got the food pyramid wrong, the low-fat diet wrong. So there are many things where we should actually have more civil discourse and open discussion. And maybe we need to treat more diabetes with cooking classes than just putting people on meds. We've got the most over-medicated population in the history of the world. Half of our nation's kids have obesity or diabetes. We've got to try something different. We've got to look at our poison food supply, these engineered food additives, the role of pesticides and what it's doing to gut health in children. You know, autism has gone up 14% every year for the last 23 years. And in my field of pancreatic cancer rates have doubled in the last two decades. We've got to talk about the root causes of these chronic diseases, not just medicating people.
I consider myself to be a pretty educated person, especially about topics that are on the leading forefront of politics, of news, and so on and so forth. But the RFK Jr. addition to the MAGA movement and the Make America Healthy Again movement, I mean, I'm like eyes wide open on it, because we have heard some of the things that are being said by RFK Jr. for decades, and previously kind of written it off as Looney Tunes stuff. But it's medically provable in many cases that a lot of the things that we're consuming are harming us. And when you're a thought leader, when you're at the front of discussions like this, you have to be willing to sound crazy at first if you're convinced that you're right. And Dr. Marty McCary is one of the people. He's Johns Hopkins professor, surgeon, author. His book's out right now. It's Blind Spots. So we're going to talk to him next. But I don't know about you. I mean, raising a family, especially with my kids, I've always tried. Growing up in the 90s, I feel like all we ate was non-food food.
Oh, yeah.
And nobody, it wasn't like
and
our
nobody
parents,
said anything.
Our parents weren't making decisions about feeding us that were educatedly irresponsible decisions. You just ate stuff that lasted forever out of a box. Mm-hmm. It would never perish.
Yeah, it wasn't until I was like 20 that somebody told me, you know, all you're eating is carbs.
Right.
I was like, oh, I didn't even know. Like, this stuff was kind of groundbreaking 20, 30 years ago. And when you hear RFK talk about this stuff, you're right. He's not necessarily saying anything that you've never heard before. What he's saying that's shocking, that's making people's eyes open, is the government knows all this and they're all in bed together.
Sure.
That needs to change. And that's what's making people go, oh, I didn't even realize that could be changed.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to Dr. McCary when we come back. His book is Blind Spots. And he says that we need to start asking questions that challenge deeply held assumptions in medicine. Ryan, I might ask you to jump in on this one, sure. too, because I know that everybody in this room has various experiences with medicines and with different conditions. And, you know, Dr. McCary is bringing to the forefront conversations and blind spots that we need to be having. So I'm excited to have that conversation next. So don't go away. Dr. McCary on the Andy Fry Show next in the YouTube live chat poll. Are you paying attention to polls? We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Andy Fry Show. Thank you for being with us this afternoon. We appreciate your time. I want to get directly to our next guest because I'm incredibly excited to speak today with Dr. Marty McCary. You know him and you've heard of him and he's written books before, but his new one out is Blind Spots. Doctor, thank you for the time today. It's a real honor to have you back on the show with us.
Great to be with you, Annie.
I'm looking at some of the things that Blind Spots is covering, and what you're really doing is trying to upend the groupthink that takes place in all of our medical thinking, all of our novice medical thinking. There are a lot of assumptions that people make, and you're trying to call them to the forefront. Give us a highlight of how you got to the point where you wanted to put this down in words in a book to change the way people process medical attention.
Well, there's a bunch of giant areas in medical science that we don't traditionally talk about in hospitals, and that is gut health and the microbiome, our poison food supply, ultra-processed foods, the role of pesticides and seed oils. These are things that relate to every aspect of American health. And so people need to know the truth. So a bunch of us as doctors now are trying to go directly to the public to educate them, because these are not things you hear about in your typical doctor's visits. The benefits of hormone replacement therapy at the time of menopause for women are overwhelming, reducing Alzheimer's risk and cognitive decline, reducing the risk of heart attacks, and result in having stronger bones. So people need to know about all these topics I write about. And so that's why I wrote this book.
I appreciate that so much because, you know, one of the things that you talk a lot about is gut health. And I want to start with that. I so many women, I'm 40, I've had four kids, and so many women my age are dealing with gut issues. A lot of them are trying to figure out ways to, you know, stay in shape, to make sure they maintain their weight, and they're trying to maintain their lifestyles as well. And there's always a lot of convenience things offered that you can invest in to try to help you along that way. But gut health seems to be such a problem. And I have dear friends of mine who are basically my age who have died of colon cancer at such a young age before they even recommend that you go get your colonoscopy. Tell us what we have been thinking about gut health and where we should be shifting our focus.
Well, new research is showing that gut health is central to everything. So we call it the microbiome. We're talking about the different bacteria that normally live in the gut, that normally line the intestine. These are millions of different bacteria that live in a harmony. And they're involved in digestion. They train the immune system. They make serotonin, involved in mood. And when it's out of balance, when we mess with it, it can cause inflammation. And that's one of the reasons we think colon cancer is going up in young people. You've heard about colon cancer going up in young people. One study found colon cancer is higher in people that were born by C-section, which we know changes the microbiome. Antibiotics change the microbiome. Now, both can save lives, C-sections can save lives, but they're both massively overused. So when you hear someone say, you know, I'm taking an antibiotic or I want to take an antibiotic, there's no downsides. No, it alters the microbiome. And when kids take antibiotics they don't need, the kids are more obese. That's something they've noticed in animals for a long time on farms. When you give animals antibiotics, they're fatter, and that's because it changes their microbiome. So we need to preserve healthy microbiomes, eat good whole foods, avoid seed oils and pesticides. If pesticides kill pests, what do you think they're doing to the bacteria in the microbiome?
Right. Yeah, destroying it.
Dr. Marty, this is Ryan Wiggins. I just wonder what, you know, the things that you're saying, they don't sound revolutionary to me, yet you're up against a lot. You know, why is it that you seem to be somebody who people are saying, well, I'm gonna push back on that? What are the systems that are in place that are resistant to hearing what you have to say?
Well, there's a lot of groupthink. It's in medicine, but it's in society in general, and it's just permeated medicine. You know, take vaccines, for example. Vaccines are important. They save lives. Most of them are very crucial. But if we could took 1% of our enthusiasm as a medical profession, of the absolutism by which we talk about vaccines, and talked about our poison food supply, it's like unheard of. We never heard about obesity during the pandemic. We don't talk about certain things like gut health, and that's just because of the group thing. Doctors are not bad people. I think we've done a terrible thing to doctors in America. We've told them to focus on billing and coding in short visits, and we have not given them the time or resources to talk about the root causes. If you ask why chronic diseases are going way up, they might say, well, it's because of obesity. Well, obesity is a symptom of a larger problem, and that is a poisoned food supply.
We're speaking with Dr. Marty McCary. He's a Johns Hopkins professor, surgeon, public health expert, and author of his new book out, which I just got on Audible right now, so you can get it wherever you get your books. It's called Blind Spots. I look forward to reading it and learning from it. How much of the solution to the problems that you pose, the things that you bring to the light in Blind Spots, how much of it is just, you know, the reader can make those choices for themselves and can choose to live a healthier life and make healthier decisions? And how much are, you know, average folks like myself up against a system that is making it too expensive or too impossible to be able to get healthy foods to keep their body healthy the way it needs to be?
Well, we've been fed many lies by big food, big ag, and big pharma. Big pharma has a hammer lock on American medicine and on our institutions, medical schools, and even the regulators. And the reality is we've got the most over-medicated population in the history of the world when we can be making better decisions. And a lot of the information we give people is wrong. Doctors have been telling patients for 60 years to avoid fat, to eat low-fat foods. Well, I go through in the book Blind Spots why that was wrong advice, and it still looms large today. We can prevent our peanut allergy epidemic by introducing a little peanut butter when children are 5 or 6 months of age, in infancy. The modern-day peanut allergy epidemic was ignited by the medical establishment giving wrong advice on peanut avoidance in the first 3 years of life, hormone therapy. So there's a lot of things people need to know about that we're not talking about in medicine that we should be talking about. Maybe we need to treat more diabetes with cooking classes instead of just throwing insulin to people. Maybe we need to treat more high blood pressure talking about sleep quality, not just throwing meds at people. And maybe we need to talk about school lunch programs, not just putting every overweight kid on Ozempic.
You know, I hear in a lot of what you're calling to the forefront here, Dr. McCary with us right now, is that there are a lot of quick fixes that are being sold to the American people. And the quick fixes are not actually fixing the problem, not even quickly or even at all. Is it a capitalistic mentality that's hurting Americans' ability to make good decisions? Are there policies that need to be changed at a governmental level?
Well, we need to do a lot of things. First of all, we need to get rid of all the corruption. All these so-called experts that are conflicted, they're getting paid off by the industry. We've got to deal with the subsidies that make a lot of these bad foods so cheap. And that's why they use them in the ultra-processed world. You know, 10 to 20% of the calories that we take in our diet today in America are from seed oil derivatives. They sound healthy, like vegetable oil, but it's not. It's denatured and it's turned into a chemical. People should be cooking with extra virgin olive oil and avocado oil and coconut oil. So people need to know the truth for their own day-to-day decisions, and we need some big policy changes as well at a federal level.
Dr. McCary, I apologize if this is a question that you answer a lot, but as a novice, you know, I hear these words like the food supply is poisoned. And I just wonder, is there a brief explanation you can give to somebody like me who is just kind of learning this to understand that when we hear that phrase, what that means?
Sure. Well, we have 1,000 ingredients in our food supply that have been banned in Europe and Canada. Kellogg's makes two versions of Fruit Loops, one for the U.S. with all kinds of chemicals and one for Canada where they don't allow those chemicals.
take bread, for example. We strip it of its fiber and then chop it up into pieces that's so small, it's basically functioning like sugar. Refined flour is often turned into sugar. And we wonder why kids are not paying attention after their school lunches. We wonder why we're ushering in this epidemic where half of our nation's children are obese or overweight. It wasn't true just a generation ago. It's only 3% of children in Japan are obese or overweight. A pediatrician would rarely see a case of type 2 diabetes one generation ago. Now, one in three kids born today will go on to have diabetes or pre-diabetes. So we've got to stop and ask, what are we doing? And that's something that we've not been willing to do. We have a food supply that was built for food insecurity. Make it as cheap as possible for mass production. Well, what we're realizing is we just got the sickest population in the history of the world. We can't just keep medicating everybody. Mm-hmm. We need to realize the cost of creating all these sicknesses. Because when you put a lot of the chemicals down somebody's GI tract, what's happening is their body is reacting, and it's making them feel sick. Their bodies are reacting at the level of the intestine with an inflammatory response. Not a giant acute inflammatory response when you eat these chemicals. A low-grade inflammatory response making people feel blah. They feel sick. And we can't just keep medicating all these kids.
Yeah. I relate to all of this so much, and I can't wait to read Blind Spots by Dr. Marty McCary. We really appreciate your time today. We might ask you to come back again and talk a little bit more about the book and keep informing people about these things, kind of breaking the norms as to how we feel and think about our own medical care, but just our general health decisions in the first place. Doctor, thank you for being with us today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks so much.
Of course. We appreciate you. Dr. Marty McCary, Johns Hopkins professor, surgeon, public health expert, advocate for healthcare transparency. I feel like the things that he's explaining about how your destroyed GI tract is making Americans feel, I absolutely feel that. I've always been somebody who's had to monitor my health. And if I didn't pay attention to things, I don't have a naturally, you know, on fire metabolism. I need to work for every pound that I don't gain and like three times as hard for one that I want to lose. And I feel like when he talks about how people just feel blah and then he says they feel sick. When I started training and eating specifically to fly with the Blue Angels so that I could try to handle that, I didn't know what I was doing. I just thought, I'm just going to do the best I can. Probably going to fly in a Super Hornet, F-18 Super Hornet, and barf anyway. So, but let me put myself in the best position so that when I do this, I don't think, well, if I weren't a slob, I wouldn't have had. And I did that. And I started in March. I flew in, I think it was the first week of June, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I started eating protein and fiber and just trying to eat clean things. I didn't count calories at all. And I've always counted calories. I've realized that I'm not eating enough calories, actually. I need to eat more calories, and when I go to eat more calories, I just need to make sure that they're good calories. And then if it has fat in it, that doesn't inherently make it bad. If you're eating a lot of protein, if it happens to be red meat, that isn't inherently bad. There's all of these things. I think most of you guys know what this is like to sit there and you're trying to make healthy decisions and it feels like you're being shouted at from 8 million different directions. You better not touch that and you have to eat all of this and they're all conflicting. And at the end of the day, you just still feel sick because what we're putting in our body, even when it's with the best of intentions, is inundated with things that I essentially tell my kids, if God made it, you can have it. And the closer you can get food from the way God made it, if it grows out of the ground or if it walks on land and we can, and you, and even at that point, if you're eating beef that's being fed by pesticide grown feed and that the meat is being shot full of antibiotics, like it's so much work just to eat healthy. And I'm really looking forward to reading this book. I'm going to consume this one pretty quickly.
It seems like we're at a point in America right now where this has been bubbling up under the surface for a while, and it's now just becoming an issue that, okay, everybody has heard this. Seems like most people are on the same page. Like, you know, something needs to be done here that within a generation, our food supply will look different than it does now.
Yeah, I hope so. And I mean, a huge influence that RFK Jr. can have, should Donald Trump become the president of the United States, he's going to have a huge influence on this. It's brought in a whole contingent of people into the Trump side of this political movement that I really feel like you could make an enormous impact on the future health of this country. And without that joint venture, I don't think it happens the way it could possibly happen right now. So I'm here for it. And I'm looking forward to reading Blind Spots. Go get that book wherever you get your books from. I do Audible. I get my books on Audible. All right, let's take a quick break. Wiggins America, when we come back, how to respond to someone who is giving you the silent treatment.
This according to psychologists.
Okay, I know you send stuff, but we've been so busy that I didn't read any of it. So I have good. No idea what's coming.
Good.
Or maybe I was just giving you the silent treatment. We'll be right back.
If you ever give anybody the silent treatment, but there's a lot of reasons why you may be giving somebody the silent treatment.
I don't particularly give people the silent treatment, but if I'm mad, I get real quiet.
So you're giving people the silent treatment. Yes.
I'm not, but I mean, I feel like if you say you're giving someone the silent treatment, it's like an active thing you're doing to someone to affect them.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep my mouth shut.
So you're doing something in retaliation or in response to somebody doing something that involves you being silent?
No.
It doesn't.
I'll say it slower this time.
Okay.
I'm not doing something in reaction to to a situation that has happened. If it has upset me, if it's a problem, I will get quiet, not to do that to people, but because the alternative is me not being quiet, which at that point in time while I'm quiet, it's because should I use the words that I am thinking and wanting to say, it would make the situation infinitely worse.
I'm going to read a few reasons why you might be doing that.
Okay. Did I write this article?
Dr. Joel Frank.
I'm not a yeller. I just want to put that out there that I am not somebody who, like, if I get to the point where I am raising my voice, it's too late.
I'm a yeller, and I'm old. I'm old yeller. These are reasons.
More like old yella.
These are reasons. No, I'm not a coward. And I'm not really even that much of a yeller.
But you are old.
But I'm old. I'm older than you guys. Man, 43, starting to feel it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got to spread out the age on a show, you know? You need multiple perspectives. That's why you're here.
Yeah, I'm the old voice.
Senior citizen.
You guys are like a year and a half younger than me, and so you can provide the Gen Z view.
You watch your mouth. We give you the silent treatment for the
these
rest
are
of the
really
show.
Are. Now, this is what these doctors from the Duality Psychological Services have said. This is why you may retreat into or choose to participate in the silent treatment. Number one, a desire to avoid conflict. That's pretty much what you
number
said.
Number one.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's why you're doing it, is because you think if I say something now, it's going to make things worse.
The intention, it's like the best I can do at that time.
Well, I understand.
And it's like, you don't want to say something that you would regret saying later on because you're angry. You don't want to say something that might hurt the other person that you didn't really mean because you're mad in that instance. But, you know, like what you're reading there sounds more like that person is saying that you're saying you don't want to say anything because I'll just make it worse, and it's, you know.
Yeah, it's less of an active silence, I got to hold myself back.
It's a self-control. Yeah, that is more of a...
I'm going to run away from the situation.
But I do it, it's more of a, like, I need to...
I'm not running away.
Yeah, I need
I'm
to...
I'm holding myself back.
Self-control.
Yeah, you're not yellow. Emotionally overwhelmed. You are so emotionally overwhelmed by the moment that you decide, I better not say anything. That's kind of what...
I've been like that before, but that's not... It's not an... When that situation is happening, it's usually when I realize that I'm more emotional than rational.
Okay.
And that usually happens in things like sports, where it doesn't really matter. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling a type of way, which could be really good. Mm-hmm. If something really good happens, for instance, we had a volleyball tournament a couple weekends ago, and my younger girls, we won the consolation bracket of this tournament, but we were an underaged group of girls. And I just had to stop at the end of that. Instead of getting super duper crazy excited, like, I just had to stop and take it in because I wanted to be like, rah! You know, I wanted to be like super excited. And I'm like, I'm a grown woman. I can't do that here in front of these people.
That's the way I felt about Mike Jones and the tackle, 1999, 2000. I sat there on the couch.
I let that out. I let that out so much.
If you're in your own living room, it's jumping up and down, going crazy.
How about this one? You go silent in an attempt to manipulate, punish, and exert power over another
person.
That's
what I do.
Is it?
Not intentionally.
Does it work?
No, I think that's the aggressive silent treatment.
Yes.
It's like, especially if you know that that's the type of thing that's going to like really upset somebody, is to get the silent treatment. If you're talking to someone who needs to talk the things through immediately, and you're the type of person who doesn't, like, you could passive-aggressively do that to somebody. So that's like a move. That's a maneuver. Mm-hmm. That's not holding yourself back.
And that's not what you said you do.
That's not what I say that I do.
You're just,
I don't know
yourself.
If that's what you guys feel that that's what I do.
Well, next time it happens, we'll let you know.
That would be a great idea.
That'd be a great idea.
We will not let you know.
You do that, and then you'll go, you're right, she shouldn't have opened her mouth. She should have stayed quiet. Yeah.
But I think that one's the one that people perceive is happening the most.
Yes.
Yeah. Or, this is the other side of that, it's an attention-seeking attempt. So you're actually trying to bring the focus
where
back
you're like
onto yourself.
More present than you've ever been, but you're not saying words.
You're not saying anything.
That's what one of my children does. I won't tell you which one. But they just like show up and like pass through the room with stone cold eyes and no words. And if you ask them a question, they're like,
This one seems like it could be related to all of them.
Yeah.
It's just hurt feelings. You're not talking because your feelings are hurt. But you could be doing multiple other of these along with having hurt feelings. It seems like your feelings are going to be hurt in any of these circumstances.
Unless you don't have them.
Like who?
I don't know anybody like that. No.
Lack of communication skills. I like that they listed this one. Like, you know what? Maybe you're just not good at talking.
That baby just won't say a word to me.
All she does is cry.
And the last one, you need to think and process something before proceeding. That one seems very mature. That's probably the reason to do the silent treatment.
That, to me, goes hand in hand with, was it the first one? Mm-hmm. That's like,
the
alternative to being quiet right now is talking, and these aren't the words that should be said.
Mm-hmm. Now, here are a couple ways.
Are you capable of the silent treatment?
Oh, yeah, I can, but I can't do it for a long time. I can for a while I'm like, I just need space. I need to get away.
Can I make an assumption about you?
I don't have to agree with it, do I?
No. Okay. You could correct me. I would like to know if I'm wrong. Okay. You're the type of person who would do silent treatment to get attention so that you could get something talked about.
If you're
giving someone the silent treatment, you're doing it to get somebody to understand that you're upset.
I would say yes, but then again, you could say that about any of these and I'd be like, yep, that's me. I'm all of those.
I don't think you're a silent treatment guy, though.
Mm-mm.
I'm usually not. I usually want to address a problem if there is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, quickly, because I'm uncomfortable with it.
Brian and I had an argument one time, and you asked me if you could give me a hug afterwards.
Did I really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember this.
I hate hugging.
That's a terrible idea.
I, to this day, don't know if that was your checkmate.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
See, that's how much I wasn't trying to do anything weird because I don't even remember.
We were headbutting pretty bad, and we got to a resolution, and it was good, and you're like, I really just want to give you a hug. Can I give you a hug? Which he asked. That was nice. And I was like, yep.
Did I do it?
Yes!
Really?
Yes!
Man, I wish I could remember what that was.
I thought it was a power play.
It might have been. Apparently, I won.
Droy Murdoch, Nick. Maybe I was just giving you the silent treatment. We'll be right back.
I don't know if you ever give anybody the silent treatment, but There's a lot of reasons why you may be giving somebody the silent treatment.
I don't particularly give people the silent treatment, but if I'm mad, I get real quiet.
So you're giving people the silent treatment. Yes.
I'm not, but I mean, I feel like if you say you're giving someone the silent treatment, it's like an active thing you're doing to someone to affect them.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep my mouth shut.
So you're doing something in retaliation or in response to somebody doing something that involves you being silent?
No.
It doesn't.
I'll say it slower this time.
Okay.
I'm not doing something in reaction to a situation that has happened. If it has upset me, if it's a problem, I will get quiet, not to do that to people, but because the alternative is me not being quiet, which at that point in time while I'm quiet, it's because should I use the words that I am thinking and wanting to say, it would make the situation infinitely worse.
I'm going to read a few reasons why you might be doing that.
Okay. Did I write this article?
Dr. Joel Frank.
I'm not a yeller. I just want to put that out there that I am not somebody who, like, if I get to the point where I am raising my voice, it's too late.
I'm a yeller, and I'm old. I'm old yeller. These are reasons.
More like old yella.
These are reasons. No, I'm not a coward. And I'm not really even that much of a yeller.
But you are old.
But I'm old. I'm older than you guys. Man, 43, starting to feel it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got to spread out the age on a show, you know? You need multiple perspectives. That's why you're here.
Yeah, I'm the old voice.
Senior citizen.
You guys are like a year and a half younger than me, and so you can provide the Gen Z view.
You watch your mouth. We give you the silent treatment for the
These
rest
are
of the
really
show.
Are. Now, this is what these doctors from the Duality Psychological Services have said. This is why you may retreat into or choose to participate in the silent treatment. Number one, a desire to avoid conflict. That's pretty much what you
number
said.
Number one.
Right?
Absolutely.
That's why you're doing it, is because you think if I say something now, it's going to make things worse.
The intention, it's like the best I can do at that time.
Well, I understand.
And it's like, you don't want to say something that you would regret saying later on because you're angry. You don't want to say something that might hurt the other person that you didn't really mean because you're mad in that instance. But, you know, like what you're reading there sounds more like that person is saying that you're saying you don't want to say anything because I'll just make it worse, and it's, you know.
Yeah, it's less of an active silence, I got to hold myself back.
It's a self-control. Yeah, that is more of a...
I'm going to run away from the situation.
But I do it, it's more of a, like, I need to...
I'm not running away.
Yeah, I need
I'm
to...
I'm holding myself back.
Self-control.
Yeah, you're not yellow. Emotionally overwhelmed. You are so emotionally overwhelmed by the moment that you decide, I better not say anything. That's kind of what...
I've been like that before, but that's not... It's not an... When that situation is happening, it's usually when I realize that I'm more emotional than rational.
Okay.
And that usually happens in things like sports, where it doesn't really matter. Like, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling a type of way, which could be really good. Mm-hmm. If something really good happens... for instance, we had a volleyball tournament a couple weekends ago, and my younger girls, we won the consolation bracket of this tournament, but we were an underaged group of girls, and I just had to stop at the end of that. Instead of getting super duper crazy excited, like, I just had to stop and take it in because I wanted to be like, rah! You know, I wanted to be like super excited. And I'm like, I'm a grown woman. You can't do that here in front of these people.
That's the way I felt about Mike Jones and the tackle, 1999, 2000. I sat there on the couch.
I let that out. I let that out so much.
If you're in your own living room, it's jumping up and down, going crazy.
How about this one? You go silent in an attempt to manipulate, punish, and exert power over another
person.
That's
what I do.
Is it?
Not intentionally.
Does it work?
No, I think that's the aggressive silent treatment.
Yes.
It's like, especially if you know that that's the type of thing that's going to like really upset somebody, is to get the silent treatment. If you're talking to someone who needs to talk the things through immediately, and you're the type of person who doesn't, like, you could passive aggressively do that to somebody. So that's like a move. That's a maneuver.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. That's not holding yourself back.
And that's not what you said you do.
That's not what I
you're
say
just,
that I do.
You're just.
I don't
holding
know if
yourself.
That's what you guys feel that that's what I do.
Well, next time it happens, we'll let you know.
That one.
That
actually,
would be a great
no,
idea.
Won't.
That'd be a great idea.
We will not let you know.
You do that, and
that
then
moment,
you'll go. You're right. She shouldn't have opened her mouth. She should have stayed quiet.
Yeah. But I think that one's the one that people perceive is happening the most.
Yes.
Yeah. Or this is the other side of that. It's an attention-seeking attempt. So you're actually trying to bring the focus
where
back
you're like
onto yourself.
More present than you've ever been, but you're not saying words.
You're not saying anything.
That's what one of my children does. I won't tell you which one, but they just like show up and like pass through the room with stone cold eyes and no words. And if you ask them a question, they're like,
This one seems like it could be
which
related to all of them.
Yeah.
It's just hurt feelings. You're not talking because your feelings are hurt. But you could be doing multiple other of these along with having hurt feelings. It seems like your feelings are going to be hurt in any of these circumstances.
Unless you don't have them.
Like who?
I don't know anybody
no?
like that. No.
Lack of communication skills. I like that they listed this one like, you know what? Maybe you're just not good at talking.
That baby just won't say a word to me.
All she does is cry.
And the last one, you need to think and process something before proceeding. That one seems very mature. That's probably the reason to do the silent treatment.
That, to me, goes hand in hand with, was it the first one?
Mm-hmm.
That's like,
the
alternative to being quiet right now is talking, and these aren't the words that should be said.
Mm-hmm. Now, here are a couple
ways.
Are
you capable of the silent treatment?
Oh, yeah, I can, but I can't do it for a long time. I can for a while I'm like, I just need space. I need to get away.
Can I make a assumption about you?
I don't have to agree with it, do I?
No.
Okay.
You could correct me. I would like to know if I'm wrong.
Okay.
You're the type of person who would do silent treatment to get attention so that you could get something talked about. If you're giving someone the silent treatment, you're doing it to get somebody to understand that you're upset.
I would say yes, but then again, you could say that about any of these, and I'd be like, yep, that's me. I'm all of those.
I don't think you're a silent treatment guy, though.
Mm-mm.
I'm usually not. I usually want to address a problem if there is a problem.
Yeah.
Like, quickly, because I'm uncomfortable with
Brian
it.
Brian and I
talk
had
about
an
it.
Argument one time, and you asked me if you could give me a hug afterwards.
Did I really?
Yes.
Oh, I don't remember this.
I hate hugging.
That's a terrible idea.
I to this day, don't know if that was your checkmate.
Whoa, really?
Yes.
See, that's how much I wasn't trying to do anything weird because I don't even remember.
We were headbutting pretty bad, and we got to a resolution, and it was good, and you're like, I really just want to give you a hug. Can I give you a hug? Which she asked. That was nice. And I was like, yep.
Did I do it?
Yes!
Really?
Yes!
Man, I wish I could remember what that was.
I thought it was a power play.
It might have been. Apparently, I won.
Droy Murdoch next.